Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark TechNet. I want to welcome everyone back. I've been away for 2 weeks in the 18th century. It wasn't a heck of a lot of fun for me. I'm glad to be back here in the 21st century with its problems and all. So once again, this is the Limark Technical Net. For more than 43 years, people gather together on Sunday night at 8 o'clock in front of their radio to teach each other, to learn from each other, to entertain and amuse each other, and hopefully to have a good time as well. It's been going on for 43 years, and it's here again this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay. If you want to reach me via email, if you can't get me on the radio, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. That would be either for mailbag questions, questions that you are unable to get onto the repeater on a Sunday night, or if you have a topic for discussion that you would like to discuss, or you would like to be part of a discussion, or you'd like to hear other people be part of a discussion and sit back and listen to them. Or if you have any technical puzzles, we're always looking for technical puzzles to kind of stimulate conversation. Or if you want me to poke Paul, WS2N, and give him some links, videos, or websites that have NASA or space-related stories, and you want to get his opinion, of course, you can reach him directly. He has an email address as well. It's spacenetreport@gmail.com. But mine, once again, is mailbag@ac2gs.com. I have a link page available. Every week I cut and paste together a whole bunch of articles and YouTube such that I feel are very interesting, I'd like to share with people. And if you type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, it'll bring that up. It's available 24/7, any time of the day, any day of the week. We usually have a chat room. Unfortunately, the server seems to be down right now, but who knows? Hopefully, they'll fix it, and they'll be up later on. If it is, the way to get to it when it's back is to type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. Right now, I just get a connection error, so hopefully they're working on it. Also, well, let me drop for a second. I don't want to time anything out. Okay. I want to remind people that we stream on the Internet an audio version of this technical net, and I leave it on the rest of the week so you can listen into Glen Oaks via the Internet. Just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the audio stream. And I always like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive of these technical nets. Going as far back as September of 2006, his site is called amateurradio.tv. He's had over 1 million visitors, so make it 1,000,001. So those are the usual links. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Well, we have the usual ideas. I will take questions and comments from people out there. We'll ask. Hopefully the first few questions will be amateur radio related, but we're open to any kind of science and technology. Especially lately, I've looked back into the subject of home control electronics. I used to have my house run on X10 controllers that you could have bought at Radio Shack. And as time went on, I moved up to Insteon because it's a much sturdier design. Unfortunately, time marches on and they went bankrupt, so they're not reliable. Another guy bought up the name and the stock, and it's kind of hit or miss, so I felt it's time for me to look for greener pastures. So I'm looking at other technology related to home control. So if anyone out there has expertise or questions, you might as well pile them up as well. So with that in mind, we should be good until about 10:15. I'll turn it over to Paul, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report. And I'll take it to about 11 o'clock, and I will return and tie a bow on it and wish you well for the week. So with all that in mind, let the questions, comments, and topics begin. Please, if you have them, hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign.
Ed, a renewal question, K2GJE, over.
Okay, Ed recognized. Anyone else?
K2AJU, I'm Charlie from West Babylon, Vermont.
Okay, very good, Charlie. We got you down. Anyone else want to put their name down? Okay, unfortunately, Wesley and John doubled, but I made out most of it. I didn't quite make out John's call sign. Your volume is very, very, very low. If you could give it to me again, please. Did you say it one more time? You're speaking real fast, John.
King Bravo 2 Alpha Golf Papa. His name is John Juliet Ocean Hotel November.
Okay, very good. So I have Ed, I have Charlie, I have John, and I have Wesley. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list before we begin? Okay, we'll begin. Ed, what's your question tonight?
Thank you. That's Yankee Whiskey, JoJo from Harrison, New York. Just checking in and listening. Roger, roger.
Okay, very good, Joe. Thank you for checking in. Let's get back to Ed. What's your question, Ed?
Good evening. This is Ed, K2GJE. I have to renew in November, and I started the process. You have to have a username. The username is your email. That's easy enough. You have to have a password. And it has to have so many capitals, so many lowercase, so many numbers, and so many punctuation marks according to their request, which I did. So, and they also sent me back an email that they received all that information from me. But I'm not ready to renew because my renewal time is November, which is only a month away anyway. I just wanted to know, I can't do the last part of the process of actually renewing my license and paying the money to them. I want to know if anyone has done the last step. Their instructions don't seem to be that clear, and I even read it in the latest issue of QST. The last step doesn't seem to be that clear. If anyone has done the last step of actually renewing, that's my question. Over.
Okay, very good, Ed. I renewed my license a few years ago before you had to pay. So I the only knowledge I have I gleaned from articles, including the QST. The big magic number is 30 days. When your expiration date is less than 30 days, I believe that the FCC site will have an option to renew your license. What you did when you got your email as your username and a password was to enter a kind of secondary layer of the FCC ULS database called CORS, which is the software that they use to process a money exchange. So you got an account and a password for the CORS function of the FCC. It's just a matter of waiting for the less than 30 days for the website to trigger to show you the request that you should be able to select to renew. If anyone out there has any practical experience in doing it and has other ideas of what's going on, please feel free.
Agency, John.
Yes, John.
Okay, So Leslie, I'll say it slow. You've completed the first process, getting your username, password, and everything else. Now, you submitted that. They're going to contact you by your email that you're beginning the process of paying for the process of getting your license. It's a 2 to 3 week process, even if your license is due November 1st. But I would go ahead, once you receive the email that your license is being processed, then you're going to expect payment. And you're normally going to do that through with a credit card. You're going to create an account again for the credit card. And then you're going to pay that. And then you're going to get a confirmation email that it's been paid. Then they're going to send you another email that your license is being processed. You don't want to let it lapse, because if you let it lapse over a period of time, you're going to end up being off Echolink. They knock you off of Echolink immediately after the license expires. Then you got to pay a process of somebody out there put you back on Echolink, but he charges you $1, which is, I didn't worry about. I just paid it. But, you know, you don't want to be without, in other words, without being renewed. But once you get the information to repay again, and I think that's like $34, I believe I paid, and then you're going to process it with a credit card, and then that bill. You're not going to get a license in the mail no more. You could download a copy from the website. It's going to say copy on the license. They don't send out no more hard copies like years ago. That can make in trouble. I'm out somewhere?
No, you didn't time out. We're just waiting for Roy to come back. This is Paul, WS2N.
Okay, sorry about that. Every so often, my plan B kind of locks up for some strange reason. Anyway, it's $35 to renew the license. It's approximately 30 days before that you're eligible to pay it. So if your license is expiring the end of November, they probably won't process it until the end of October. But otherwise, that's good information, John. I didn't realize Echolink was that on their toes, because I've bumped into more than a few amateur radio operators who unfortunately blissfully unaware of their license status and had let it expire months earlier before, you know, someone took a look in the database and said, did you notice that your license isn't valid anymore? And they said a little oops, and they went back and paid it. So I thank you, John. Anyone else with anything further to say on this subject?
Just me again, Ed.
Yeah, sure, Ed.
I believe you can start the process 30 days before the license expires, and you have a grace period of 2 years. I don't know if you're allowed or not allowed to operate in those 2 years where the license has expired. That's another question. I called the FCC and asked them if they received all the information of me giving them a username and a password, and she said, yes, we received your information. And I said, are you going to send me an email? She said, no, we're not sending you any emails. So there's some confusion here if they're going to send me an email when I start the process, or I have to start the process myself over.
Well, Ed, a couple of things. The two-year grace period is that, you know, if you let it lapse, and then you want to renew it in less than 2 years, you don't have to fill out, you don't have to go for any exams or anything. You just pay your bill and you get renewed, but you can't operate. Theoretically, the day that your license expires, it is illegal for you to operate on the amateur radio bands. I would be sort of a self-starter. I wouldn't expect or wait for email. The FCC is not a very dependable agency these days. They're not really budgeting that much into amateur radio. So I would be somewhat more aggressive. After When you're within the 30-day window, I would go back to the FCC ULS site and look around for a renew link, because I think that that's the way it generally works. And since you have already registered with CORS, it's just a matter of entering your credit card number or how you mean to pay for it, and it should be relatively painless. In the old days, the ARRL, especially in the old days when you didn't have to pay, the ARRL, if you were a member, would take the job on themselves. They would renew your license because it didn't really require much in the way of any kind of documentation. But since the FCC implemented the $35 for the renewal, they stopped doing that. Instead, they're just writing articles on the subject. Yes, Wesley.
I'm on the web page, radioprep.com. It refers to the IRL, and it says that you can renew a license 90 days before it expires or within 2 years after it expires. I would like to find out. I'm kind of confused. Is that old information? Because you're talking about 30 days.
Yeah, Wesley, I think that's old information. It's not IRL, it's URL. That's old. I just read, you know, people out there who are members of the ARRL, we get QST. It's now going to cost us a lot more next year when they kick up the price. But they had an article on the subject, and they clearly showed that it was a 30-day window these days.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Wesley. Anyone else with anything on this particular subject?
John here. You guys might want to copy this guy's call sign and look him up on the he's the one who's going to help me out with everything. His call is W4 Victor Echo Sierra. He was the one to help me out. His email is kind of long, and if I read it, I know somebody's not going to copy it down. But if they look up this guy's email, call sign, it's W4 Victor Echo Sierra. You can get in touch with him, and he's the one who got me moving along as far as second payment to. I like the gentleman's price that the FCC didn't tell him that they're going to require the second payment. He was the one who pushed it along. It's $35 I'm looking at it here. $6 for the fee and $35 for the process. He was the one who helped me move along. And I actually found that I was knocked off Echolink. And then I contacted somebody down here thinking I had something wrong with my phone. And he looked me up. He said, no, your license expired. So that's how I found out. My license had expired. I thought it was good to 24, and I was good to 23 of last month. But they don't notify you anymore. You have to take care of your own, make sure everything's in order. Back to net control.
Okay, John. By the way, W4VES is James. Unfortunately, James QRZ entry doesn't have a email address, so I don't know exactly, you know, how you hunt down his email address, because I usually go to QRZ, and a lot of people put it there, but some people don't. The $6, I guess that might be a credit card fee for servicing the credit card or something. I'm not really familiar with that aspect. I mean, theoretically, you know, a lot of people do this. It shouldn't be that difficult. Again, I think the magic solution, as long as Ed already got his CORS account with his email username and his password, it's just a matter of waiting within the 30-day window and trying and finding the link that just says renew. If he has a problem finding the link that says renew, you know, he talked to the FCC before. I'm sure he has the phone number still on his phone. He can call him back and ask for something. But I think that after, you know, within the 30-day window, it just shows up on the ULS page along with the other information. But I wish you luck, Ed. It shouldn't be that much of a difficulty now. When they were first setting it up, I don't know if you recall, but the entire FCC data bank was kind of off and on for about 4 to 6 weeks because they were having a great deal of problems integrating it into their servers and such, the new payment system. But hopefully those days are long past and it shouldn't be too painful.
K2GJE, the girl at the FCC, she was very good, I must say that. She did give me a date where I can start the process. I found the form on the internet easier to understand and easier to fill out than any verbal or written instructions. I'll just wait for that date in November to come up, and I'll start the process myself and see what happens, and maybe I can give you some more information down the line. Thank you for your help, over. Yeah, John, you were doubling with Ed, so the first half of what you said I couldn't quite make out because Ed had a much higher audio level. Ed just kind of mentioned that he talked to the woman at the FCC, and she told him when to log on, and that he'll do it in November, and he'll let us come back and let us know how it all went. So if you could repeat what you said, because unfortunately you doubled with that.
Because if I see up, when I see up, I normally not doubling with everybody on echoing, but I guess this is a little different. But anyway, you want to copy down my phone number, I'll give it to you on the next go round, and you can have it in case you have a problem.
Okay, we have a very interesting set of connections. We have All-Star, we have IRLP, we have Echolink, and sometimes it doesn't lock out people the way the old way of dealing with Echolink did. If you want to give it on the net, and Ed has a piece of paper and a pencil ready, Ed, do you have something to write down the John's phone number in you know, if he gives it to you?
Thank you. I'm ready.
Okay. Take it away, John.
Phone number is 848-992-2157. 848-992-2157. The handle is John, the Ocean Hotel, November. And when you call, Ed, just let me know you're the guy who's doing the life. Okay? That's the next one.
Okay, very good, John. Thank you for your helpfulness, and Ed, I wish you luck. Again, I'm very optimistic. I don't think it's going to be that much of a head-scratcher, but I do look forward in the future when you come back and relay your experiences and inform us all. So thank you very much, Ed. Okay, let's go on to Charlie. Charlie, 2AGAU, I can't read the prefix, if you can repeat it again for me. What's your question or comment for tonight, Charlie?
I'm KE2AJU. It's nice to see you helping a guy. I got the feeling he's not computer savvy.
Well, you know, I mean, computers are interesting instruments. They give us so much and they take so much, and they can be headaches. And you know, the FCC is not the best programmers in the world. Having played around with the ULS and know that it's very easy to find yourself in some nook and cranny of the FCC website where it isn't the ULS, even though you asked for the ULS, you know, these things sometimes are problematic.
Oh, yes. Government bureaucracy.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of it's bureaucracy and some of it's budgetary. The FCC's had its budget cut and cut and cut again. And, you know, I think if they had their druthers, if they could kind of hoist us off to some other department, they probably would, unfortunately. I don't really feel a great sense of love there.
What we need are people, ham specialists in the FCC. It can't be run by the government.
Well, lots of luck with that. Unfortunately, one of the last things anyone in Washington thinks about when they think about the FCC is amateur radio operators. What they're really thinking of is the cable industry, is the internet, neutrality laws, and selling off spectrums to large companies for billions of dollars. Very few of them are thinking about us.
Yes, unfortunately, yes, that's the truth.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the people sitting there running it, I think 99% of them are lawyers. You're not going to find a electrical engineer on the board of the FCC these days.
You should. I mean, how many lawyers are on ham radio? Probably very few. Very few. We need people of our own interest on the FCC who represent us.
Well, but the problem is, according to a statistic I just read recently, there's only 800,000 licensed amateur radio operators, and I'm willing to bet more than half of them are technicians who have a Baofeng in their drawer someplace, and that's the high and the low of it. The problem is we don't have any political clout. If we had a significant block of people voting one way or the other, we would have much more political power. But with only 700,000 hams and maybe 300,000 active hams, politicians don't have time for those small numbers.
What a terrible assumption on your part.
Well, that's the nature of politics. What can I tell you?
You're lost in politics.
Say again, you were a bit noisy there. I don't know what happened, Charlie, but your signal kind of went really bad. It's about 99% noise, so, you know, if there's some way of tweaking it, if some setting went the wrong way, if some connector is going loose, you know, try and tighten it and tell me what you'd like to talk about tonight.
Talk about trying to pass the general test. I'm trying to study for it, and nothing seems to stick.
Well, you know, it depends on what kind of a person you are and what's the best way to study for an exam. And I've seen people with all kinds of different approaches. There are people who buy the books and read the books from one end to the other end. I know some obsessive compulsive people who think that they're going to read Part 97 of the FCC, which is great if you're going to law school, but I wouldn't recommend it to get a license. And then there are others who like the internet. That was kind of the route that I took. I was a kind of repetitious studier because the questions are published and the answers are published. If you have a decent memory and you have the patience of Job, you can go over each and every question, as I did, to the point where by reading the first three words of the sentence, I already knew what the answer was. Now, I had people say that that's an awful thing to tell people and an awful thing to do because it doesn't train you, it doesn't teach you the beauty of radio. And my attitude was, let me get the license first and I'll learn the beauty of radio later. And, you know, by fact of me sitting there doing a technical net, it must have worked out for me. So, but it depends on the individual. If you're a guy who likes to read a book or if you're a guy who likes to listen to videos, then so be it. But I sat there with a damn iPad and went through every single test question three or four times before I got incredibly tired of it and just wanted to go out there and take the exam. Yeah, but your mileage might vary.
I'm not the person who could sit behind a book. I'm not the person who could sit behind a computer. I'm the kind of guy who works with my hands.
Kilo 2, Hotel Zulu Echo with info.
Yeah, sure, please, Echo.
Yeah, how you doing, gentlemen? Just a recommendation. I heard you guys talking, and I'm listening in the background to your wonderful net over here in the Bronx, and coming in on 2 meters. It's really cool because if you want to get your general, let me tell you something. The best site that I've used is hamstudy.org. Hamstudy.org. And I went to the QRZ site. I've been to a lot of them. The hamstudy.org is sponsored by ICOM. You can take it via Zoom. You can go to a place near you and take it and what have you. I gave myself 5 days, and it helped me to pass 98% of the questions that are on their test were on the test that I took, and I passed. So that's only a recommendation if you want to do the internet thing. I heard you say you're more of a hands-on person, so, you know, that's up to you. But it's hamstudy.org. It's sponsored by ICOM. Over.
All right, I'm going to take your advice. And you're coming in pretty clear out of the Bronx.
AD2DU.
Problem, but yeah, I'm not trying to take over the net. I really enjoy this net. I think it's kind of amazing, you know, that he's run it for so many years, and I've always listened to it. So if I can help someone out, you know, it's more the merrier. Like I said, QRZ is not bad or anything, but that ham study is amazing, buddy. I actually wanted a study where the QRZ one I didn't care for myself, but everyone's different. But hamstudy.org, I told two other hams, and they got their ticket.
Okay,
very good.
Yeah, back to the control. Thank you so much for letting me chime in. K2AZ and Throgs Neck in the Bronx, right across the bridge.
What's your first name, sir?
Yeah, name on this end is Tom. Sorry about that. Name is Tom.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Tom. Yes, hamstudy.org is a very fine place. It's also part of the online VE exams. They have a sister website which handles the online websites that you can make an appointment any time of the day, any day of the week. To take it via computer. The people testing you might be at the other end of the country, but it's legitimate, so that, you know, gone are the days that you have to wait, you know, 4 weeks until a local VE team comes down and wants to test people. So, and, you know, hamstudy.org is a great place. I used AA, I think it's AA9PW.com. Which had the same sort of things. They all publish the question pool is for extra. I think it's something like 400 odd plus questions. They're all published. They're all available. It's just a matter of time. If you run through them all, you'll see them all at least once. So you know, whatever works for you. I certainly would suggest what Tom did. Again, because it's very similar to what I did. And, I understand you like the practical approach. There's not really a practical approach for taking tests. It's not like you could take out a voltometer and oscilloscope and kind of figure out exactly what kind of questions, for the most part, the FCC wants you to answer. But I wish you luck, and I'm sure if you apply yourself. You know, I've told people I'm a volunteer exam guy myself. I give these tests. So I tell people that for the most part, you don't need to be an electrical engineer. You just have to demonstrate enough motivation to go over the questions. You know, back in the early days, the 40s and the 50s, They were written exams. You had to go to the FCC, you had to take the Morse code exams, and then, you know, then there were not multiple choice questions. Supposedly there were questions like, draw a Colpitts oscillator, include the values for the discrete components. But those days are gone. Now it's published multiple choices. I wish you luck, Charlie.
Thank you very much.
Question.
Yes, someone had a question?
Yeah, with in the website of FCC for renewal of the license, they're asking for FRN, FCC registration number. Is it the call sign that serves us the number?
The FRN is what was given to you when you filed to get a license. If you go to the ULS of the FCC, you look up your license, included on that page is your FRS.
Oh, so when I look at the FCC at my call sign, then I'm going to see my FRS.
Yes, if you're on the ULS page where it has, you know, when you last renewed your license, if you changed anything in your license, you know, little notifications of what's happened in the last, say, 15 years, because the database kind of started at the turn of the century. They didn't record any previous records, but one of the things that they have entered there is your FRN number.
Thank you.
ABQDU.
Yes, Alex.
Wesley, the detail page of your QRZ page, if you hit the View FCC record page, it pops up directly to the page that has your FRN on. It's on the left side in the middle.
BUS2N.
Isn't good then, Dr. Roy? Kilo 2, Hotel Zulu Echo with info, when I get a moment.
We have an empty carrier.
What's an empty carrier?
An empty carrier is when some individual just puts his push to talk and doesn't modulate it. So it's the repeater has a PL tone, so it's transmitting, but it's not transmitting any speech.
Thank you.
No problem. Well, let's see where we were. Paul, you wanted to say something.
Yes, Roy. If you have a copy of your license, you should have it somewhere. The FRN number is written on that license, and you can find it. The numbers, those numbers are a little smaller than the other numbers, but you can see it right on the front of the license. At least it's on mine.
No,
back to you.
Control, sorry about that. This is K2HZE with a comment.
Thank you very much for that. I have it after the license.
Okay. Yeah, it's there, but... It's there, but there aren't that many people these days, unfortunately, who have a copy of their license anymore. In the old days, when you got your license, the FCC would mail you a copy. Now you have to go and download it and print it yourself, or have someone else print it. Tom, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, Net Control and everyone out there, go to Radio QTH. Type in Radio QTH. You can get a copy of your license right now. And you can get it with the official seal and everything on it. If you're an ARRR member, you can have the ARRL yoga logo. You can. There's a couple of different features. That's Radio QTH dash license certificate, and it's a copy of your official FCC license. There's a license certificate. There's the FCC license copy. So that's Radio QTH. If anyone wants to check that out, you can get a copy right now and put it in a plaque.
Okay, but these are companies making money. You can go to the FCC site and you can download a copy that doesn't say that it's not legit, and you can print it out yourself for the cost of the paper you put in your printer, I've seen those places. I've had them print out a pretty version of my license with a little plaque and such. And, you know, it costs you a couple of bucks, but if you want to do that, you certainly can. But you can get it for free just by going to the ULS and downloading a file, probably a PDF, and just printing it out. So if you got a printer at home, you could do it for free. Anyone with any... Yeah, does someone want to say something?
Oh, back to that.
Okay, a little doubling.
Lower left-hand corner of the paper copy. Also, years ago, we had to apply for the FRN, over.
Yes, when you first applied to get an amateur radio license, they required a federal registry number. So if you didn't have one and there was a place on your application to write the FRN, they would give you one. And what you could also do is go to the FCC site even before you had a license and request an FRN number and have it ahead of time, which is what I did. I really went kind of a little wacky. I got my FRN number registered. I made out copies of the application forms and all kinds of things. So I knew exactly what to expect when I sat down. Anyone with any other comments on this particular subject before we move on? Okay, I guess we've kind of dealt with this. Once again, Charlie, good to hear from you. Please come back and tell us when you passed and the good news.
Thanks for I will.
Okie doke. Once again, I am AC2GS. This is the Limar Technical Net. And next on our list here tonight is John, KB2AGP. What's your comment or your question or topic for tonight, John?
Bravo 2, Alpha Delta, John. Last week on your absence, net control, you were talking about that meteorite that came down and they mocked it up and took it away to a warehouse. The one who was covering for you, your net control, I said that. Saying that it could come next week, maybe with a follow-up question, which is now, what turned out, Lenny, that meteorite that came down, I haven't heard nothing about it on the news anymore, so I think you guys will know more or less what, any updates on that meteorite, what was in it, was anything of water particles or anything like that, I was just wondering, back to next control.
Okay, very good, John. I'll call forth Paul, our SpaceNet report guy. Is there anything new about the meteorite?
What John is talking about is the OSIRIS-REx descent capsule that came flying through the atmosphere. The one that collected rocks and soil from an asteroid, Bennu, a couple of years ago, and it took a couple of years for it to get back to Earth. That's the one he's speaking about. We talked about that. John was wondering what the results were. Yeah, their goal was to bring it back to Houston, and which they did. They didn't open it in Utah. It came down in Utah. And they brought it back to Houston for the scientists to work on. And, they open the outer cover. And before they get, under the outer cover, they have another inner cover called the tag head, TAG, the touch and go head, the actual piece that actually collected the samples from Bennu. So when they opened it, before they got into that main area to start looking at things, they saw powder and dust and little debris on the deck before they even opened it. So that means when it closed, there was some stuff that gathered there. Well, the scientists want to know exactly what all that is. So that's the deal with that. They want to know what the stuff is, but
they don't want to open up the main part to see, you know, to see the actual samples that were brought back. They want to see what this other stuff is first, so they're examining that with, you know, microscopes and this and that. We don't have any results yet of what that is, but again, when they do release that information, you know, I'll be here. I'm usually here every Sunday. And like you said, it's very hard to get on the news. But we'll see. We'll see. And yeah, I was going to cover that anyway later tonight. But since John asked, we might as well do that right now. Back to you, Roy. WS1.
Okay, very good. We kind of covered that way back when, you know, when they were going to land, when they pulled off. The fact that it seemed to be a very loose collection of stones rather than a nice big hard meteor that we're used to, the ones that kind of, when they land here, all that you know, kind of pebbly stuff kind of burns off rather quickly and leaves a solid core to hit the ground if it still hits the ground. So yeah, we covered that the A part of that story years ago. So it's nice to know that mission completely accomplished. It's not going to be a kind of overnight thing. Researchers don't really like to, they're not the same as reporters. They're not going to run in and do a lot of quick and dirty tests and come out with a news article. So the information probably gleaned from this is going to drip out in little bits and pieces over the next probably 2-3 years. You know, there'll be stories of it as, you know, relatively far in the future. So if you're very curious, you'll hear a lot about their results over the next few years.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, we had discussed that many, many years ago. 2016, the thing took off. Seven years ago. We discussed the side of a rocket and why they were using only one booster, and Dick was still around, and he loved that topic as well as you. I know you were really into it, Roy. So, yeah, everybody during the space part of the net was really talking about OSIRIS-REx that successfully took a couple of years to get to that asteroid, then orbited it for a couple of years, and then it actually went down and took a sample, and then took another couple of years to come back to Earth, which happened last Sunday, you know, that's on the 24th, and when I said, oh no, this figures, a great topic that we all talked about, including you, Roy, and I knew you weren't going to be here that day, so at least we could talk about it again. And we will talk about it when we get more results coming in, that's for sure. Whether it's next week or 5 years from now. Some of the stuff is going to be saved for 50 years from now, just what they did on the Apollo missions. Some stuff they did not touch. They left it sealed, waited 50 years to look at it. And the idea behind that was scientists that aren't even born yet will be looking at this with newer equipment that they haven't even thought of. And that's exactly what they did. Anyway, back to you, Roy. WS2S.
AC2GS. Well, yeah, that's understandable. You know, they try to not be too destructive with the specimens. You know, for a lot of analysis, even when they're doing paintings and such, they'll take a couple of fibers off of the very corner of the frame so that they don't destroy the thing. So, yeah, there'll be a lot of specimens available for future generations of scientists, but I would think that in the next few years we'll get a lot more information of, you know, what's inside the inner collection. You know, is it a solid mass? Is it a bunch of pebbles? Is it a bunch of dust? And what the constituents are, what's the material that makes it up, how they think that the material was formed in space based on different characteristics. So it will probably be mentioned here more than a few times in the coming years. I hope we don't have to wait 50 years for that.
Yes, you're 100% right. And I mean, right now they're calling it black dust. So
we got a long way from now before we find out what that is, and then after they're able to completely remove all the debris, and then they're using, you know, fine equipment and all kinds of equipment to analyze that. Once that's off the deck, then they'll be able to open it, and then they'll really have a ball looking at that stuff. It looks like it's probably 0.5, or I think it's a little over half a pound of material. That, yeah. Back to you, Ron.
KC2GS. Okay, well, we'll see what's to be seen. Black powder, that could be almost anything. Could be an iron oxide. Could be carbon, and a lot of other things. So again, we'll probably get a lot of information slowly released. You know, there's not going to be some kind of amazing discovery like we found a business card from a small green alien written in an alien language. But it'll be interesting. It's you know, this is the first time that we have done this sampling with heavenly bodies that didn't crash land on the Earth first. So it'll be all interesting. It'll be nice to see as they roll it out slowly. Give NASA some grist for the mill that's not going to annoy the people keeping the NASA budget low. Because, you know, I mean, researching the deposits in that carrier isn't going to cost them as much as, say, planning a flight to Mars or the Moon.
And they are hoping to find amino acids. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. We'll see.
Well, yeah, I mean, surprisingly, organic chemistry is alive and well and living in the universe. If you just put together bits of carbon and hydrogen and sulfur and nitrogen, it's not that difficult for them to coalesce and bond into organic chemicals that can end up being in the class of amino acids. And, you know, that goes back to the old question of where life began. Did it begin in some little pool of water on the Earth, or did it begin somewhere out there and crash land onto the Earth? So, a lot of good questions that need to be answered. Any other comments on this particular subject before we move on?
John, I appreciate it. I'll keep abreast of any findings that you find in the coming weeks and years. It's pretty interesting. And by the way, I just printed out my copy of my license with not no sample on it either. Straightened out. That's other station. Thank you very much. Back in that control.
Okay, very good. You used the radio QTH?
Follow what he said and went there and
figured it out. Oh, okay. You know, it's interesting. The FCC doesn't let you do that unless you use your proper password on the ULS. If you go to the FCC ULS, you can log on, or you can just go there without logging on. And if you pull a license on a FCC page without using your username and your password, it stamps something to denote that it's not a legitimate copy. So it's interesting. I have nothing better to do. I'm going to have to wander over to Radio QTH and see what they do. I doubt that they download it from the FCC. They probably have their own template and create a pseudo license, if you will.
I'd be interested if Radio QTH had a fee, Roy.
Well, if memory serves me, their way of making money is to kind of sell you products based on your license. So if you want a nice little fake wooden plaque that has a replica of your license on it for a nominal fee, they'll sell it to you, and other little knickknacks and such. I think that's the place that I got it from originally. I didn't remember that they just allow you to print it out from from their pseudo-FCC template, but they certainly do sell those things if you're interested. And that's what I kind of did, because I could print it out myself, but you're not going to get it from the FCC anymore. Years and years and years ago, they said, by the way, we're not mailing anyone anything. So if you give us your email address, we might email you. But that's about as far as we're going to go, because, again, they're trying to save a couple of bucks off of us. Well, thank you, John, for participating, and have a great time, and you know where to find us if you have any other questions or comments. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Okay, on to our next participant is Wesley, N2XJN. Wes, what's your topics for tonight?
I was thinking that that would be nothing special. Actually, I'm going to be criticizing some ideas, saying a few words about them, or a few technologies of the material. Actually, there is something for entertainment. So, New Guardian, The Guardian, right, new bacteria lurking into ISS, no space oddity, scientists says. And that actually sent us to the Panspermia, P-A-N-S-P-E-R-M-I-A, Panspermia. That's at Wikipedia, which is the hypothesis that life exists throughout the universe, and eventually in some ice. So let's say we have an ice from space, or eventually the ice from space could have landed in the air a long time ago, and it could have a life in it that actually expanded. But you have a few words about Panspermia to say. Now, that actually sent us to astrobiology, let me jump. And there was a trio of scientists from US and Japan, that's Poseid, P-O-S-I-T-E-D, Poseid, that viruses may be spread across the interplanetary space. So everything started from one article. And eventually Caltech Space Science, we have a similar material about bacteria from out of space. So it looks like pretty, plenty of quite known institutions or names were kind of interested with it. So interstellar influenza, space virus could reveal alien life. It's in Life Science. Another article, just after that. Let me drop. And few words, you probably think about viruses only when you're sick. And then it says about astrobiology, it says about things that could happen in strange space, a definition of life, and so on and so on, and eventually electron microscopes that could help, and then says that in ice of Mars, we may possibly find some forms of life from the ancient time. I wonder if Paul could give us a few words about the contents of ice in Mars. Let me drop. And then eventually it says about scientists' horizontal gene transfer, the development of DNA, which is by reminders of ancient life forms. And of course, according to modern science, you all guys are animals, including me. We just happen to evolve a little bit differently. And that's why we have a consciousness. Dr. Roy.
Okay, AC2GS, that was a few dozen questions. Human beings are part of the animal kingdom. You know, there are different kingdoms. There's plant. There's eukaryotes, prokaryotes. And we're animals. We're all animals. We're multicellular life forms. We consider ourselves above most other animals because we rule the roost.